Welcome to the See You Next Summer podcast. I'm your host, Billy Polahan, and with me, as always, is my co-host, the one and only, well, not Raul, because we're also joined by another Raul, Raul Alejandro Mendoza, who, I mean, you guys should listen to that name, because, I mean, when you see his film, which is going to be great. I'm hoping for that Oscar buzz. But yeah, what's up, Raul's?
I'm pretty good. Also, nice to meet you, Raul. And Raul, for you to know, Billy, Raul is a really popular name in Mexico.
Yeah, like, bro.
There's like two Raul's out of 10 people, at least. Like, that's a lot of Raul's. And Raul Alejandro is a nice combo. Mine is Raul and Raul Adrian. So, and how you doing, Raul Alejandro?
Todo bien, compadre. Bro, we're good here.
Muy bien. ¿No? ¿Sí sabes español?
Claro que sí, bro. Claro que sí.
Excelente.
Yeah. No, todo bien. We're good here. You know, I twisted my ankle in the beginning of the day. You know.
Oh, shit.
Pero le echamos ganas, bro. Don't worry about it. We're good here.
Esa es la actitud. Esa es la actitud. Now, today, yes, we're gonna do a director that I know that he's a good director, but I'm not a big fan of his. And I know that the other Raul is gonna be he's gonna ask me a lot of questions about it. But I chose this movie because it's one of the only movies that I like of his filmography. Because when I saw it in theaters, there's a lot of scenes that are in my brain, especially the Adriana Barraza storyline. We're gonna do Babel. This was released in 2006. And also because I didn't tell Billy that was a surprise. Because when we did a Mexican movies last year, I had a topic in mind. It was only about immigration. And so that's why I chose Babel too, because just to make it rhyme. Because Babel and Under the Same Moon, you can play those two movies and it could be part of the same timeline.
Yeah. Alejandro is my favorite director of all time. Mm. Beautiful is my favorite movie of all time.
Mm.
I've got it. I have never pre-ordered a Criterion as fast as I pre-ordered Amores Perros.
Nice.
I got this one so fast. Once I saw, I was, and actually, if you were to see my Twitter account, there was like on five occasions that I tweeted, please, Criterion, pick up the new restoration of Amores Perros that Alejandro's doing. Because, like, I was also, at the time, you know, when it was announced that he was making this restoration, the pandemic hadn't hit yet. And he was playing, like, this big, like, showing in Mexico City in Plaza Garibaldi, bro. He was going to, you know, play the movie with Gustavo playing the score. And then after, he was going to have a concert with all the bands that are in the soundtrack. So you would have Fiebre, you would have had like Julieta Venegas, you know, you would have had like all the, and like, I was seriously considering like, bro, am I going to go to Mexico City, bro? But then of course the pandemic hit, that didn't happen, but Criterion announced it. I picked this up so fast. I paid full price. And yeah, I mean, I love Alejandro. Alejandro is one of the reasons why I want to become a filmmaker. I think he's one of the most unique voices in Mexican cinema.
Wow. Yeah, and it's a voice that I am not too familiar with. I've only seen now three movies of his. The only other two I saw were the big awards contenders, which were Birdman and The Revenant. I mean, I'm an ignorant American. What do you expect? But I really do, after this movie, want to get into his filmography. I want to see Amores Perros and 21 Grams especially, because I hear that is like his best movie.
Well, that's the thing. I understand. That's the thing. Like, comparing the three, I even told Billy once, I was like, the thing that I like about Alfonso can adapt to anything. That's the thing that I have noticed about Alfonso. He can do fantasy, war, super topical, like in Children of Men, or like the thing that he did in Gravity, or also when he did Roma. But for me, my favorite, sounds the cliche, but I love Guillermo because Guillermo, he's so in focus of telling something that a lot of people would not like to see about it. Like the stories about monsters, but mixing up with tragedy about war and like so many things, like especially with Pan's Labyrinth and The Shape of Water. Right? I still cannot believe that The Shape of Water is about a woman that had a sex with a merman and he won an Oscar. And I'm like, yes, Guillermo, yes. But that's the thing that I love about Guillermo, because Guillermo would do anything. That's the thing I love about Guillermo. He has so much passion. And for me, even though I'm still a fan of Alfonso loves me after Gravity. I don't feel that. I feel that Alfonso mature a lot, or maybe Alfonso is trying to find another group, especially with Roma. I was not a fan of Roma. I can understand why. Like, Roma looks beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I'm like, I don't care. And that's the thing. I didn't grow up in Mexico City, but I went to visit once. But I grew up in Mexico, in Monterrey. But I'm like, even my sister saw it for 20 minutes and she took like a nap. Like, it was like, that movie was boring. And with Iñárritu, Babel and Berman are like those movies, two movies. I was like, I admire what Iñárritu is saying. But there's a lot of his movies that I don't connect with him. And that's the thing. A lot of people have their stances on directors. I'm one of the few people that it would do anything to defend M. Night Shyamalan. I love him. It doesn't matter if he does bad movies. You roll your eyes. But that's the thing. I love it in Night Shyamalan's style. And so,
yeah.
Everybody has different opinions.
I mean, what's it called? I've talked to Billy before about it. I'm like, I'm biased, bro. I'm biased. Alejandro, to me, I love Alejandro, but Alfonso's the best. To me, Alfonso's the best one of the three. He's, bro. Alfonso, when he works at a different level that I don't think a lot of filmmakers understand cinema as much as Alfonso Cuarón does understand.
You have a point there, especially how he rocked the world of Harry Potter. In only one movie, you have a point there.
Yeah. And, you know, I admit, but, you know, of course, you know, hey, I'm mi papá, bro, Guillermo del Toro, you know, Memo is something, bro. Memo's the best. Memo's great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something about Alejandro that always, like, gravitated to me. And I guess it's just because I'm such a person who's, like, interested in the things that us as humans we share together, and mm-hmm. I think that's a lot what Babel says. It's like, you know, we live in different parts of the world, but we all love the same, we all care about our family the same, we all want to maneuver this life the same, and it's, you know, the experience is different, but, you know, we are all just human at the end. There's just one thing that seems to what's it called, geography seems to be the one thing along with language that separates us, but we all are connected through what those human attributes are.
It slides to the theme of the movie, because that's the name. It's Babel. It's about the Tower of Babel. The difference between languages and different political views will make a lot of people not understand each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in doing this movie, it's kind of difficult to do our regular recap, because mm-hmm. this is the first time where it's nonlinear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's four separate stories, but they're interconnected. I believe it's, I think it's called hyperlink film or something, where they're interconnected stories, but they all happen at different points in time,
mm-hmm.
different people. Pulp Fiction is the same way. And if you're a fan of that style of storytelling, a lot of people are not a fan of that. So really the only way that we could recap that, I talked to my host Raul
mm-hmm.
About this prior, and it was just, let's just go over the stories themselves, and it's more or less just going to be a talking about like the themes, the motifs, mm-hmm. and just how the movie is made it really does stand out, because most filmmakers don't really put this much into like the scale and
mm-hmm.
just the human emotion that was in this movie, because it is very deep themes, and man, is it depressing.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah, it is.
It sort of ends on a hopeful note, but oh my lord, there are some.
My hopeful note?
Well, sort of.
How hopeful she was about. She was ready to kill herself, bro.
I mean, it had like themes of hope, I guess. And what happened to the kids?
And that's
the thing, my one question.
For me, I saw this movie in a full theater in Mexico, and a lot of people were really angry at what happened to Adriana Barraza's character at the end.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I think. Everybody has different opinions about the movie. And also, I'm impressed that theater was full for a movie like Babel. And that's the thing. In Mexico, doesn't matter if it's Hellboy or Roma or Gravity, whatever. If it's a movie made up by a Mexican director, it's like going to see a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie.
Yeah, bro. You like, show yeah, up,
like
bro.
Everybody goes to see it.
Yeah.
It's a representation, and you know, mm-hmm. because it's made by somebody, a native person, he's going to understand he's going to understand his people. You're going to understand where you come from.
Yeah.
I mean, also my favorite scene happens to be in that storyline, but we'll save that. So really, I want to let you guys choose what story do you want to do first, because there's four of them. And we can explain how it connects, but just... Which one would you
character, bro? Because
her story, the first story, I think is the kid, the kids with the rifle / Brad Pitt, Kate Blanchett storyline. I think is the first one. Timeline
wise, yes, yeah, Morocco.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, so it starts off with this older gentleman, and he has this rifle that he's selling to a friend of his, and he's just like explaining how the rifle works. And he's like, good, take good care of this. And he gives it to his friend who is a goat herder.
Mm-hmm.
And the rifle is meant to protect his flocks. And we just see just a regular life of this goat herder, Abdullah, I believe is his name. And he gives the rifle to his sons. And he shows them how to shoot. The older one, Ahmed, does not know how to shoot, and he's very skittish, and he's very, mm-hmm. very much a beta. And then his younger son Yusef picks up the rifle and immediately is very accurate with it. And then they're like, okay, he's going to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's funny because usually it's the older sibling that you would think would be in charge, but here it flips it on its head. Which I really appreciated that.
And they have kind of like they kind of hinted that these brothers, they love each other a lot, but there's kind of like some rivalry between them. You can notice the Cain and Abel kind of things there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good parallel. I never thought about that. Because yeah. mm-hmm. you did mention that this story is an allegory for the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just, to me, like, I love that story a lot, mainly because, you know, it's got, you know, I'm a brother as well, you know, and it's rough, mm-hmm. man. You know, you what's it called? You know, you have those, whether you like it or not, there is a sibling rivalry within your family, mm-hmm. dude, and the dynamic of that. Of course, I don't come from a family, or did I ever, you know, rub one out to while I'm watching my sister change in the next room? Like, that's because I don't have a sister, but, you know, that was really interesting, Alejandro. That was really interesting that you put that out, and, I will tell you, that scene always makes me feel really uncomfortable when I watch it.
I totally forgot after 15 years that was her sister.
I was like, oh, ew.
Yeah.
She was a cousin.
Still, hey, wait, is it going to make it better if it's a cousin,
yeah,
bro?
Yeah, that doesn't make it better.
Well, bro, if you
grew up watching
if you grew up watching telenovelas, you know that a lot of the couples are cousins.
I know, but also, like, you know, the term, like, a la prima se la rima, right? You know, but that's weird, bro.
I'm learning so much.
It's still weird, bro. It's still weird, man. You know, yeah. Telenovelas or something else, bro. Yeah, I'd like to see y'all do a telenovela month, bro. That'd be great.
Oh, no, I have been imploring Billy. I want him to, if he comes to L.A., I have my DVD of Cuna de Lobos with English subtitles. We're going to watch all of it.
He has told me to watch that so many times. I could make a drinking game out of that.
It's my favorite telenovela of all time. Catalina Krill is my idol.
Bro, let us, what's it called? Bring you into the delegation, bro. This is initiation.
Want to. He has wanted to show me Mexican cinema in general.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem is that it's very hard
to find,
to find him in the States.
Yeah, like I was telling Billy, like if we have a lot of them with subtitles, I was like, I'm telling him I want him to see Macario, Nosotros los Pobres, Nosotros los Ricos. No dejarás no agarras la mujer de tu hijo. I forgot that the one for Pedro Infante, and Rincón del Cielo, like so many movies like from the 40s and 50s that I want Billy to see. But
he has straight up said, he's just like, some of these movies you will be crying, like you will be bawling your eyes out. They're so good, and I'm really interested to see that.
Oh, even just especially Mexican horror ones from the 60s. Those are weird. Yeah. If Father Raul saw this movie, I would be impressed. Have you seen El Libro de Piedra?
Espérame. Let me look it up, because I'm not the best with, like, what's it called, titles, bro.
Yeah, but El Libro de Piedra is one from the 60s, 70s, and the character of Hugo, that's the thing. I'm impressed that the U.S. haven't done a U.S. version of this story.
So I grew up with, like, my grandmother raised me, and my grandmother raised me on, the golden age of Mexican cinema. So every time I would sit down on the, I'm sorry, Billy, this podcast is now.
Raul and I,
Raul and I getting to know each other here, bro. You know, they get two brown men in here, bro.
I'm more than happy to just sit back. This is great. Yeah.
What's it called? I grew up like. That's all I knew, man. It's called. I watched so much. So I probably watched this at one point in my life on the TV on like Canal de las Estrellas or something, bro. And like, I probably watched it. I just don't remember it. And now looking at the VHS tape, bro, this looks really familiar, bro. This looks real familiar.
Oh, so they put that in Televisa many times. I also saw it in Televisa, Libro de Piedra.
Yeah, I probably watched it on there, dude.
Or if Billy watches the original Hasta el Viento Tiene Miedo, not the one with Marty Gareda, not the remake, the original from the 60s. but...
Have y'all, what's it called? If you go to like modern, have y'all done Güeros yet?
Ooh, the one with Viola Davis?
No, Güeros. La de Ruiz Palacios.
Ooh.
It's a Mexican film. It's really good.
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, Güeros.
Güeros.
Not Widows. Güeros.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Awesome.
I got with, like such a long list.
Tenoch Huerta. It has Tenoch Huerta in it.
Ah,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing. A lot of the movies, and you know this, even here in the States, the recent Mexican movie that the U.S. got is here in L.A. is the four... Huevos movie, like the Huevos cartoon movie, like what was it called? As un resbalón o un robado de huevos. I forgot, secuestro de huevos. I forgot the title. And I'm like, there's a four one?
Yeah. They usually like distribute those. And then if you don't, you get those, Pantelón films, which ones they are. Like the really like overly comedic that like, you're kind of cringing in your seat.
Oh, but you can't. My mother loves those movies. And I'm I love you, mom, but those movies are not funny.
I can't stand them. Wait, like I have a friend who's like, hey, wey, yo quiero que haga esta película, bro, porque está tan, tan buena. Digo, pendejo, que wey. No, it's just fucking bad, bro. Fucking bad, I can't write comedy, man. I really can't, Ray. And you'll see, because I do want to bring before I leave to this podcast for you guys to see it and we can talk about it. You're going to see little moments where I try to do some comedy in there. It doesn't work, but I'm not going to make that shit way. Oh, yeah. Tamal, bro. Bad, bro. Bad. So when my friend told me that, I was like, cállate los cinco, wey. Hell no, I'm not going to do that, bro. No,
that's
bro.
Awesome. Anyway, back to the movie, because as much as I would love to hear just like hours of this conversation, I really would. After where do we leave off? The kids with the rifle, and they're practicing shooting it, and then the younger one is just like, "You suck at shooting. I bet you like he can't even hit the cans." Mm-hmm. And then they're just like, "Hey, let's shoot at this bus that's just going by on the road," and they shoot it four times, And then I love that after the fourth shot, because Yusef shoots it, and we know he's very accurate, the bus just stops. And then the kids look at each other, and they're like, I think we just killed somebody. We got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's when I was just like, oh, shit. Because I remember hearing about Babel, and I knew something about a bus. I thought it was like a bomb on the bus or something. Because, again, ignorant American. And I didn't know that it turned out to be just a rogue shot from a rifle. Which that also plays into the symbolism of the rifle. It's not really a Chekhov's. It could be a Chekhov's gun, but it's more so a symbolic thing. It's
more so the MacGuffin, if you think about it, right?
It really is a MacGuffin. It does kick off the plot and the whole story. All four of them are connected with this rifle. Because it also just shows in this one story how it goes from representing protection, right? It's protecting from the goat. Or it's protecting the flock of goats.
And the for killing off the jackals.
And
the rifle was a gift. And so you can go just make...
And then it turns into an instrument of destruction that causes an international incident. So it very quickly just takes a 180. And I really appreciated it.
Yeah, and also it's not a McMuffin too. It's not a MacGuffin. McMuffin.
It's not a McMuffin, bro.
It's not a MacGuffin to find Palpatine. I will always make a joke about Episode 9.
God,
I hate being a filmmaker, man. I really do. I hate it because I watch that scene when he shoots it, and I'm like, the bullet couldn't have hit her, because we cut. They are seated on the right side of the bus. He shoots into the left. That gun, that bullet should have hit the old guy next to them.
Oh, not her. You mean the asshole?
Yeah, the angry tourist.
Because when you see when she gets shot, it comes in like this, not like this. And I hate being a filmmaker, bro. I really do. Because the whole time after I see that, I'm like, that's not how that you cut wrong. You should have seated them on the left. But then if you would have seated them on the left, you would have had to switch it so that way Brad Pitt doesn't get shot. But it's just, I hate being a filmmaker, man. I really
do. No, wait. It's because they're Americans and they represent the other side of the world. So according to him, he shot into the right, but Cate Blanchett was technically on the left.
On the left,
it's all a big meta commentary. It's crazy. A big
meta commentary of both sides.
Yeah.
And so it's about confusion also, because it caused a political movement. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a big theme of this movie. I picked up right away that the title is very much appropriate because there's a lot of miscommunication. It's a
very important, you know, post 9/11 film, bro.
Yeah,
it's a really, really important post 9/11 film. Right off the bat, Cate Blanchett's like, "Don't drink with that ice. Like, you don't know what they put in their water." Or you know, once you know they bring her down because of the wound, like you see the way that the tourists are treating the you know the local people, and it's just they're scared. They're like, "Oh, they're gonna kill us. They're terrorists." And you know, the United States is like so eager to name this a terroristic threat, and it's just like, you know, it's a really, really important post 9/11 film to watch. No,
and also you have a very topical.
It's very topical, but also in my head, I'm like, if you're an American that you're so afraid of terrorist attacks and so many things, why the hell do you go to Morocco?
Yeah, of all countries, Morocco. Like, I understand because Casablanca is there.
Was it the cheapest option? You could not afford to go to Paris or Italy? Was Brad Pitt in a really bad mood? But that's the thing. What did Brad Pitt do? That's the thing we never know. What he do? Like, because he only really know that he left and then he came back, and that's why they're on their trip, because they need to be alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's implied that he's the one that screwed up the marriage somehow, and that they're trying to find like a spark or whatever. But we never know what he did. It kind of plays into, it's just like you can interpret it however you want, and it you could just imagine whatever it is, and knowing your imagination, Raul, I'm sure you'd come up with some crazy shit.
Oh, well, yeah.
He's gonna have like a
no. I'm pretty sure he had sex with Adriana Barraza like 50 times. Maybe one of the kids caught him. But like, there could be a lot of stuff there.
Oh my god.
Dude, that's especially a wild ass movie.
The
bro.
Way that Iñárritu shots her in the desert with that red dress, you know that red is about lust. So you can put out that Brad Pitt has sex with her. And he's like, I'm not going to press any charges. But the girl was like, no, fuck you. You're Mexican. We're going to deport your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, just the beautiful film stock that they used to shoot this. Just by the way, you know, it's shot on film. You know, it's one of my greatest goals to shoot on film one day. But that Kodak, the way that you get those reds, the way that you get like the greens and the blues in there,
Japan looks
especially
gorgeous.
When we're inside the when we're inside the nightclub, bro.
Yeah.
Oh my, beautiful.
That's my favorite scene in that story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I mean, not just because of how it looks.
Yeah.
But I know we're jumping all over the place. There's really no.
Yeah, because it's
there's really no other way to.
There's no other way of talking about this movie because it's about emotions. It's about how you react to the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So really, I'm just going to make a note and just say if you haven't watched Babel, you probably should because it's a very good movie. You got to be in the right mood.
It still holds up, though. After 15 years, it still holds up pretty good.
Yeah. But really, we're just going to be talking about how these four stories connect, and really my least favorite story is actually the Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett one, because there's not that much that happens. It's more so just like, okay, Cate Blanchett gets shot from the rifle and they're trying to find a place so they're trying to get her medical service in the middle of Morocco. It's very difficult. And they're on a tour bus, so the whole thing is just like, okay, does this tour bus stay? Mm-hmm. What about everybody else?
They don't have enough gas to go to a hospital or to drive back to Morocco.
It's a good amount of, like, cultures in that tour bus, by the way. There's English, American, there's French.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just the amount of languages that are in this movie, not even just spoken languages, there's sign language as well, which I really like. You never see too many films use sign language.
Yeah. Yeah, I find that story to like, it's really important to have that story in there. Of course, you can't take that story out.
Because
it's my least favorite. Mm-hmm. It's my least favorite, though. It's like, you know, it's the one where it's like, we have a lot going on, but at the same time, like, it's mostly really surface level stuff that's going on. It's, you know, like Brad Pitt, like the way that he just learns to like, you know, communicate better because he's communicating better with the local people. And that helps his way of like finally like letting go and finally telling his wife that like, I was so scared, you know, when we lost the kid and that's why I left. And, you know, it's a lot about the communication, right? Mm-hmm. And it's important, but it's like when you put it against like all the other ones, because my favorite story is the Adriana Barranco character story. And of course, the Japanese girl, those are my two favorite. And of course, with the, you know, after that would be the boys. But, you know, this one is like it is my least favorite story of the film.
Oh, yeah, it is the inciting incident. But
I think it needed like a more drama to it. I think especially because Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett, of course, they're the two stars of the movie. Mm-hmm. But it's also interesting they have like, what, 10 minutes of screen time? In a two and a half hour movie?
Yeah, they're not in it for very long. Of course, they're the ones that get top billing because they're the American stars and you got to sell the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not in it for very long. They do a good job. And I think it's hilarious or funny that Brad Pitt turned down starring in The Departed so he could do this movie, so he could work with Iñárritu. And The Departed is a movie that it's also a fantastic movie, but he produced that movie. So he was going to star in that. Obviously, that didn't happen. That was, I believe he was going to do Leo DiCaprio's role. And either way, it would have been a good year for Brad Pitt.
Because
those are both really good directors, great projects and everything. But I feel like he kind of got screwed in this instance.
Maybe in the Iñárritu cut, he had more storyline.
You know, Iñárritu, he probably has it, because the other thing I've noticed, his movies are very long.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Man loves his long movies, and I love him to death, bro. Boy, cut it down, bro. Please,
he doesn't know how to trim the fat.
For me, The Revenant is like was it here for like 6 hours when I got off from the theater? I was like, what the hell happened? Yeah.
Like, that's a big reason why I didn't like The Revenant.
Anyway. Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah, but that's the thing about Iñárritu. He likes to do really long movies, but that's the thing that I also wonder, maybe it would have been better, but I think maybe that's why Iñárritu made that decision, even though they have top billing. But because if you think about it, the one that has more screen time is Adriana Barraza and The Japanese Girl.
Mm-hmm.
They're technically, those two are the two leads, in my opinion.
Oh, for sure. Especially, what's her name? Rinko Kikuchi, who, funny enough, we can't connect them to the Three Amigos because she was later in Pacific Rim.
Oh, cool.
She's the girl from Pacific Rim.
That's why she looks familiar.
This was like one of her first movies.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been her first. I'm not entirely sure. But, let's talk about the Amelia, the Adriana Barraza character. So she is, so Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett, they have two kids at home. One of them is played by a young Elle Fanning. And they're looked over by a Mexican nanny named Amelia. And she gets the call that Kate Blanchett's been shot. And of course she's like, oh, shoot. What do you want me to do? And then they're just like, no, just stay at home with the kids. Don't tell them anything. Don't want them to worry. But then she's like, yeah, but my son is getting married and I'm not going to miss that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's just like, oh, no, just stay home. We'll be home soon. Everything will be okay. But yeah, just don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then she, of course, is just like, fuck that. This is my son. I'm taking the kids with me.
Fuck that.
And then, so she crosses over from the U.S., I believe it's San Diego.
Yeah, from San Diego to
Mexico.
Yeah, to Mexico.
Which, by the way, Alejandro has a way of like hyping me up with music that he chooses. In Amores Perros, once Control Machete starts playing, I'm like, shit, hell yeah, bro. I'm like, si tú me buscas, me encuentras, no vivo. You get that? And in this one, the minute you pass over.
Yes.
You hear Cumbia Sonora, bro.
Yep.
I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, let's fucking go. I'm just like getting in there. And, God, that man has a way of choosing freaking music. Like, he knows, like, oh, I think this one's going to make him hyped up, you know? Mm-hmm. I know my people pretty well.
Yeah, and also, I forgot how in detail and crowded that wedding was. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a real rancho wedding.
I was going to ask you guys, like, is that authentic? Are Mexican weddings?
Yes.
Like, I have never seen a wedding with that many people. There was
that wedding looks little.
200. I mean, there was like 200 people at least.
You are inviting the cousins, the tios, the tias, la comadre, el compadre.
The neighbors' cousins.
Yeah.
They invited like everyone. There were so many kids too.
But it's super authentic, bro. Because, like, down to the T, like, the chairs that they use, the tables, the fact that they have a live band playing, the fact that they're going to kill the chickens that make.
Yep.
Like, that is a real rancho wedding, bro.
So they really just break the neck and they pull the head off a chicken? Yeah. That's incredible.
And also,
in front of the kids, too.
Those kids got nostalgic. Because they changed the cups in Mexico, seeing those classic hard plastic Coca-Cola cups on the tables, and I'm like, my childhood.
So she goes over to Mexico via her nephew, Santiago, played by Gael Garcia Bernal.
Diego Luna's boyfriend. In my head canon.
Well, at the very least, they're best friends because they grew up together and all that stuff. And starred in Y Tu Mama Tambien.
Yep.
We should cover in the future sometime.
Yeah, we're going to do Alfonso.
That movie is a very rated R movie, almost NC-17 at points.
That's why I'm so fucking horny these days, bro. Why made me so horny, bro? I had no business watching that so young, bro.
Another thing I liked is that people speak in their native language.
Yeah.
Which is good because, like you said, it gives a feeling of authenticity that you don't really see too often. If it was made by an American director, you know they would be forced to speak English most of the time. Or and they do speak English at points.
Or in a really forced, what's her name? Gloria from Modern Family.
Sofia Vergara.
In a forced Sofia Vergara accent. Raul rolled his eyes. He knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Like, even the people.
You mean like this? Yeah, you mean like this? Like, oh my God. I cannot believe it. It's here.
The over exaggerated.
Yep.
They get in. They have no problem getting into to Mexico.
Oh, we don't give a fuck.
Yeah, they have no problem getting in there. Like, everybody is just like, "All right, that's fine." And I love that there's like a recurring thing where they're just like, "I mean, these are my kids," and they're like, "They don't look anything like you." Because she tries to drop off the kids first at other people that she knows, and then they're just like, "No, we can't do it. Nobody can take them." Reminding me a lot of another biblical story of when Christ was born, you know, there's no room at the inn.
Mm-hmm. And
they're forced to go. And I guess the donkey would be the car in this situation. Not a bad car either.
No, but also I really love that her friend, she was like, just say that is your nephew. She was like, yeah, of course. I look so gringa. What was I going to do?
Con el nopal mano en la frente, bro.
Yes, el nopal.
coming straight from those paintings of the Aztec woman, you know, holding on to the man, bro. Like, you're really gonna tell this very indigenous woman, hey, just say they're their nephews. Like, what? You think the colonizer was that strong in my blood, bro? Come on. the dumbest line in that whole fucking movie, bro.
Yeah, it's great. But yeah, my favorite scene is just that Mexican wedding. Just because, I mean, it's nice when she meets her son again, and there's clearly a lot of love. And they're totally cool with having the kids, too. They're just like, why don't you guys go over there?
Yeah, there's always that white people in the
Yeah, they're just like, yeah, these are the kids I take care of back in the States. It's no big deal. Didn't tell their parents, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. And they go over to play. And then just the entire wedding in general, I mean...
Ah, the mole looked delicious.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
The food looked, I was just like, that looks great. Yeah. The fact that it was a live band, there were so many people. I could not get over that fact. And just the music in general, I felt pumped. Like, everybody looked like they were having just the best time. It looked like a party, a fiesta that you want to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like and I felt like I was just like I want to party with these guys.
Talking about authentic things about parties in Mexico, even Adriana Barraza said it was like we have to go. It's almost 3 a.m. And even the bride is like, my suegra, you know that the party's still going on. It's still young. It's still young because weddings in Mexico they last until like 8-9 a.m. the next day.
8 a.m. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, dude, I dreaded. Every time I love Monterrey, you know, I spent a lot of my time in Monterrey, and
I dreaded
going to Monterrey for the parties because Jesus Christ, they would not, dude. It's like it's 6 o'clock in the fucking morning, and we're not stopping, and I'm like so sleepy. But you know what, man, those are memories that I cherish so much, and it sucks that I haven't been there in a long ass time, and I want to go back, but just. Billy, you ever party with Mexicans, they ain't gonna stop, bro. Yeah. That's for sure.
Awesome.
Especially in my city, Monterrey, a lot of fucking beer and meat. We can make a party just with that.
El cabrito, la cerveza, y todo.
Cabrito. Yummy.
I also just want actual tacos. There's a recurring joke between us that I always joke about Taco Bell, and he's just like, nope.
Hey, bro, I agree. You know, and Taco Bell stoner food, bro. You know, what else are you gonna pick up at 2 a.m.?
It's great at 3 a.m. and you're stoned out of your mind. But when we went to a friend of ours' wedding, me and Raul, he just they got a food truck. It was a local food truck. It was made by a couple of Mexican guys, and it was the greatest tacos I have ever had in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, bar none. I forget what he kept.
Now imagine chicharron.
Billy tried chicharron for the first time.
Oh my gosh, he was just like, you gotta try chicharron. And I tried it, and oh my gosh.
Now imagine how that is
right now. It's so
good. In the mainland, bro. Imagine that in the mainland, bro.
Except he was like, the only thing, the tortilla shells.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I hate tortilla shells. So I mean, well, they also they have
it was hard.
It was hard. They have flour tortillas too, but I don't like tortilla shells like the Taco Bell ones. But if you make them from scratch in a fucking olla with a lot of oil, those are good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody knows, you know, what's it called? Los tacos se usan masa, maíz.
Oh,
you use maíz. If you're gonna do piratas or gringas, you use harina. You know, but you know, come on, man. They gave you hard shell, bro. Come on, man.
They didn't give us. They made some hard shells, but I told Bill, no. Get the flour ones. Get the flour ones. Yeah. Those are the good ones. But yeah. Oh my god, when you say some gringas or piratas, god damn it! Now I'm craving it right now.
Yeah.
I love that. We've been 40 minutes and we barely even talked about the movie. It's so good.
I'm
not editing out any of this, by the way.
What did you think would happen? You get two Mexicans on the same damn podcast, bro. What you think?
That's why I wanted it. It's genius because you two have clearly different stances on Iñárritu.
Yes.
And just, it's more, like you said, I believe Raul said that it's a movie about emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I really love is that there's really no villain, it's all circumstance. And it's all just big,
I think the villain is
it's kind of like life.
It's like prejudice. The villain's prejudice.
There's a lot of miscommunication. There's a lot of prejudice. There's a lot of just
racism.
Kind of.
I mean, a lot of it is like, you know, it's prejudice, racism. It's microaggressions. It's a lot of things. It's mostly stemming from like those learned behaviors that we have as humans that we've learned because of being separated from each other and not experiencing each other's different cultures. So
yeah, I really like how he also just happens, or how realistic every culture is and how authentic it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I knew he would get like the American and the Mexican cultures, but it's very hard to do Japanese.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not Japanese. And I want to talk about her storyline. So this was the one story at first I thought, I don't know how these connect.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other three, you can clearly see how they connect. It's whether it's through somebody they're related to, or just the timeline of events from the shooting incident. And then you get Rinko Kikuchi's character, who is a Chaiko. And so she's just this teenage girl, of course, in Japan, but she's deaf and nonverbal. So she communicates through sign language. And she is, of course, that rebellious teen, doesn't get along with her father that well. She's got a group of friends. And something I noticed about her, she is very sexually aggressive.
Yeah. And corny.
My god, is she horny. And Raul.
I understand, sis. Talk about the
scene you were just like, I would never forget.
That's a scene that I would never forget.
Yeah.
I was at the movie theater. I think Raul would know, Cinepolis, a macro pantalla one, like the big ass one. And all of a sudden, like when she's like on the cafe shop, and obviously she decided to take off her panties, and she opens her legs to show it to the other guy. I remember there was a guy all the way in the back, and I was on the last row at the bottom of the screen. There was a guy all the way in the back. I was like, "No veo nada," and my whole row underneath was like, "We see everything." I was like, "Vemos todo acá." I was right here at the bush. Like right here in front of my
she basic instincts a guy.
Yeah.
And it is very explicit.
Yep. Because she flashes her vagina like four times.
I think it's like 3 or 4. I don't remember. All I know is, man, you know, hey, ain't nothing wrong with hair. You know, ain't nothing wrong with hair. You know, nothing wrong with that. But I, God damn, was she not lying when she said she was going to show him the hairy monster?
Yeah. And like, in my head watching it today, and I'm like, hairy monster, Lady Gaga was like, I have an idea for a song.
Oh my God.
Her story just... there's just a, you know, of course, I'm somebody who lives with a disability as well. I'm visually impaired. Mm-hmm. But I feel her story really like to the bone, man. Mm-hmm. You know, my mother didn't die, you know, what's it called? I don't have an absent father, but I understand that feeling of her like wanting to grow up really fast. You know, she's already had to grow up fast. If you think about it, she's had to see the death of her mother. The suicide of her mother at a very young age. She's had to grow up. She had to learn a lot of the lessons of the, mm-hmm. art, of the world. But she also wants to grow up at another faster rate and be able to like have those experiences that she's not having, because it's probably mainly attached to the fact that she's a disabled woman. And, you know, a lot of the time, not a lot of people really think about, you know, being sexually active with a disabled person or dating a disabled person. So she clings for this idea of like anybody who can give her something, because she wants so bad. She longs for this like sort of attention that she doesn't seem to get from her father. She gets from her friends, but it's not the same as that, you know, that idea of what she wants of like love. And I feel that story like really deep in my bones, because like it's me, man. You know, I think about it a lot. You know, it's like I want to be wanted too. I think all of us as humans, that's one thing that we all share. We all want to be wanted. We want to have somebody who can love us and also, you know, be that satisfaction that we want in our life. And Chaiko is just like constantly seeking for that in the wrong place. And, you know, she kind of gets it at the end with that man who's like, for the first time ever in that whole movie, she's not used. She's not rejected. She's just like, hey, everything's going to be okay. I'm not going to run out. You know, I just want to make sure that you're okay and that things will go get better. And that's, you know, sadly, it leads to her wanting to kill herself. But, you know, then her father's able to, you know, actually give her that comfort that she wants.
Yeah. And again, it plays into that theme of miscommunication, because, again, if you're deaf, you obviously you can't hear people. You got to either read lips or they got to know sign language. That's the only way that you can communicate, or you write something down. But it's different because you can't hear like outside sounds. And that's when they're in the club, when she's out with friends and everything. Mm-hmm. It cuts to just points where there's complete silence, where it's from her perspective. And it sucks. I don't know if I could live with that, but there are plenty of people that have to live with that. And then also, if you're an epileptic, fair warning, there is a lot of flashing lights.
He loves filming stuff in the club, bro.
He does. He
loves the club. He does it in Beautiful. He does it in this one. And he loves the club, bro. I'm sure this man spent a whole lot of time in the club.
Yeah. The thing that connects the four stories, though, is that because we'll get back to the Morocco arc and finish that out. But in the reason why this connects, because really this is kind of like you're trying to piece everything together, how everything is connected, is that the father went on a hunting trip in Morocco, and then he gave the rifle to his guide. And that guide gave it to his friend, who gave it to his sons, who then accidentally shot Cate Blanchett. And then it's kind of like something I didn't really see, because there's two detectives that come into their apartment and stuff. And they're just like, hey, is your dad here? And we just want to talk to him. He hasn't done anything wrong, but we just need to check up on something. And she thinks, or because of the miscommunication, that it's something to do with her mom. And it's not. They just want to make sure that the rifle is not black market, so they can mm-hmm. make sure that it's not actually a terrorist threat or anything. Mm-hmm. Fairly logical, I would think. And then you don't get that until like the very end, but mostly it's just watching these people live their lives. and mm-hmm. how they're all impaired in some way. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of crazy. Just I never really thought I would see that in a movie mm-hmm. like this. But Raul, what did you think about either Raul was?
Yeah, what did you think about her arc? I really like her arc. Even though sometimes I remember when I saw it in theaters, I was so really confused. I was like, what is the thing that it will hold? Why is she connected to all of the storylines? But then now that I see it again after 15 years, I noticed that it was also because of the rifle, but also because, like you said, she's deaf. But I like her story too, even though sometimes at the end I was like, why did she, even though you said that point, I didn't feel that she needed to, that she wanted to kill herself. I never saw that coming. So that was a little surprise. But I still like her story a lot, and that's the thing that communicates, because her father is a hunter that in one of his trips he met the guy, his name was Hassan, that he gave the rifle as a gift. And Hassan was the one that sold the gun to the father of the two kids. So that's the kind of like that's the line of the rifle.
But yeah, and I also love just when the father finds out, like the lead up. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh man, they killed a tourist. Because they don't know that she's still alive.
Yeah.
And the kids are obviously guilt-ridden, as anybody would be. And I love that they try to get rid of the rifle. Mm-hmm. They bury it in some rocks. And then the guilt overrides them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, all right, fine, we did it. Because the police are checking up mm-hmm. on... They're tracking where the gun was fired, mm-hmm. and they found out who it was originally from, which was Hassan. Then they beat the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm. Like,
really, they just beat his ass up, and
well, it's also
basically torture him.
If you pay attention to the radio in one of the that they were cutting between the Cate Blanchett and Brad Pitt storylines, they say Morocco has been clean of terrorist cells for a while now. And because of what happened to these American tourists, it snowballed an effect that Morocco doesn't want to be linked to terrorist attacks anymore. So that's why I understand, even though they shouldn't have, like the cops are like so violent because they want to clean that political view on their country. They don't want to feel attacked because of that stance. But also, it also understands the thing about we are saying about the whole movie, because it's about misunderstandings as well. Because if you see also the scenes with Brad Pitt in The Angry Tourist and the other ones, I was like, they're afraid of being that small town. They think in any moment they could be kidnapped, killed, or maybe being traded out for more money. And it's about those misunderstandings, because they thought just because they kill an American, this is a terrorist attack, without even knowing the nature of the whole story.
Yeah, it's those preconceived notions and prejudices that we mm-hmm. brought up before that is played really well. I don't actually have too many bad things to say about the movie, just certain things that... It's just uncomfortable subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thing with the sister and the fact that she tried... Chico is just so forward with mm-hmm. so much, just any guy,
even really. With the dentist,
her dentist, who is obviously not into it, mm-hmm. nobody's into it. And even when she feels like she is getting somewhere, her other friend takes the guy
mm-hmm.
and she was just like, I'm gonna go, like, yeah. You just see the look of defeat on her face. All she really wants is some love.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't know how. And then there's Amelia, who is just, she's there with her family, but she neglects her responsibility for the kids. And that ends up biting her in the ass a lot, big time.
Especially because the way that you can defend her character, she loves these kids so blindly because she's the embodiment of a lot of illegals and a lot of people that come to this country to work and they will do anything. And sometimes they get too attached to the job. So she was too attached to the children. She looked those children as their own children. And she couldn't go into her head that maybe, just maybe, if you get, does it, I remember when I was in the theater, me and my sister, we said the same thing. You have forged a letter and some fake signatures and just show it to the border patrol. I was like, yes, I have the permission from the parents. And you could have avoided the whole problem. But because she did not do the thing that true, she thought it was just going to be as simple as going to Mexico and coming back to the States. Because this is the thing. She didn't thought about color. She only thought of those children as the children that she takes care of. She didn't thought that because they're white, they will bring her a lot of problems.
And it's again, subversion of this expectations where usually it is the opposite, where it's usually the white people that have the problem with Mexican. You know what I mean, when they're going to and from the border.
Yes,
it's an opposite of that, which is another thing I really liked, is that I always liked the subverting expectations if it's done well and if it fits the story, which it did in this instance.
Seeing two white kids going to the desert and being dehydrated, can, like a lot of stories, especially you saw in Under the Same Moon, like
the desert is so, it does not discriminate, it will kick your ass.
And so that's the thing, it's like about subverting expectations, like the kids only needed a scene like Under the Same Moon for them to be sold to be prostitutes.
Well, we don't know what happens to the kids, because in probably the most tension-filled scene, Gael Garcia Bernal, he's drunk, obviously, because he was and angry, and he was partying till like 3 a.m. and he's just having none of it. He's very he does not take the border patrol very seriously. That is not something you should do, especially if you are not white. And then because they don't have permission from the parents, they're just like, all right, we can't let you go. But what he does, he makes a beeline for it.
Yeah.
And they end up in the desert and he abandons them.
Yep.
I mean, like, cause he's scared, cause he knows if he gets caught, he's going to be arrested. And they said before, you already got caught once.
And also, even...
What are you going to do
in a car time? In that speed chase, also, you think about it, his decision was pretty good, you think about it, because if he would have stayed still with the children, those children would have died. Because, you know, they would have put out, like, helicopters and more vans to chase that car, and they would have shot it completely. Those kids would have died there.
Yeah. And then they go in the desert and the kids are obviously dehydrated and stuff. And Amelia is just like, all right, I'm going to go look for some help, see if anybody can help us. Mm-hmm. And then she just leaves the kids there, but she has no choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the officers, played by Michael Pena, of all people, I was just like, he was always stereotyped as like cops between that and End of Watch. I was just like, I guess that's just the thing. He's always in the uniform or pretending to be in uniform like an Ant-Man.
You know, but a thing that I didn't remember, he's one of those Americanized Mexicans that he didn't speak any little Spanish to the character of Adriana Barraza. And I'm like, oh, he's one of those Mexicans.
Sabrina. shout out to our guest from Carol, Sabrina Ramirez. She is Mexican, but or Latina, but she does not speak a lick of Spanish. But yeah, we would love to have her back anytime. And yeah, no, it's really hard to just talk about this movie, but Anyway, let's just go back to the Morocco thing where the father finds out. What he does, he smacks the kids right across the face, again, yep. super hard, and he's just like, how could you do this? Are mm-hmm. you idiots? Again, appropriate response. And, of course, the brothers are just like, no, he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the other one spies on his sister naked, and she lets him. Mm-hmm. And then he's just like, is that true? Smacks her across the face. She doesn't do anything.
Yep.
And which basically admits the guilt, which is gross.
Yeah, and then especially after, well, the youngest brother, he told the cops, I was like, oh, we're looking for this man. I was like, no, he lives on the other side of the mountains just to have some time. And after he confesses everything to the father, I was like, okay, we need to run.
Oh, yeah. I love when the cop is just like, if you're lying to me, I'm going to cut your balls off.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid's just like, hey, no, man, you're welcome here anytime.
I was like, dang. This kid wants to die.
Really? For sure. And then they go up in the mountains. I think the best cinematography is in Morocco.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Between that and Japan, yeah. I think, oh my gosh, Japan has always looked so good on film.
Mm-hmm.
In a funny enough, or... The title is funny enough because of the subject matter that we're talking about, but Lost in Translation.
Ah! Good one.
I mean, it's one of the most beautiful films that takes place in Japan. And yes, the movie, a lot of things are lost in translation. And I don't know if they shot in actual Morocco. I'm trying to look up the production.
Yeah, because I know one of the other towns is called Tazarine. And I forgot the other town. Like, it's like three different towns in Morocco.
So they filmed in Ibaraki and Tokyo in Japan. Mm. In El Carrizo, Sonora, and Tijuana in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And they did film in Morocco.
Nice.
Okay. So and California, obviously. But... Ooh, I learned this. The actress who plays Amelia is a 2-time survivor of minor heart attacks, but she still carried Elle Fanning around in the desert in Southern California in the summer for 5 days. If you've ever been in the desert in general, mm-hmm. oh my God.
That's the worst, bro. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for this movie.
She was. So was Rinko Kikuchi, mm-hmm. I believe. And I believe this won a Golden Globe for Best Drama.
I think so.
It was nominated for some Oscars.
Because of this movie, she got the role of being on the coffee shop in Thor, and all her scenes got cut. And Raul knows what I'm talking about.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, they did her dirty, bro.
Yeah, they did her really dirty in the MCU. She only showed up in that real cut for like 1 minute, and she had like 5 minutes of deleted scenes, I think.
That's like Rene Russo in the first Thor movie. She also got screwed. Yeah. She was literally just there, gone.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, boys, but I finished doing what I had to do. It seems that Raul wasn't the only one who had internet issues in this house. You know, my grandpa had some, apparently. But I wanted to bring up something, and I wanted to ask it specifically to Raul.
Yeah.
But Raul, when Gael gets to that what's it called to the checkup, do you also get this big looming fear?
Yes.
My heart stops, bro. Mm-hmm. My heart stops. I'm somebody who constantly goes to those checkpoints. You know, if I travel to Houston, if I travel to San Antonio, if I travel to Austin, doesn't matter. I always pass those checkpoints. And, of course, those checkpoints are kind of a reminder that, you know, we're second-rate citizens in this mm-hmm. country and we're not really wanted here. But my heart drops. It sinks into my freaking stomach when I see him pulling up there and I'm like, oh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the cops start searching the car. And they're like,
the way that you know, feel like a shame, the way that he's looking yeah. even in every single thing in the fucking bag. That's the thing, yeah. really, because he knows. I cross a lot between the borders too. They make you feel the worst every time that you cross the bridge. Dude.
Like, why'd you go? Mm-hmm. Why'd you go? Who'd you go with? What were you doing over there? What did you buy? Who did you see? Uh-huh. And just berated and got asked these questions. And it doesn't even stop there, bro.
Even my father wants to make a joke. I was like, do you want to know where I shit to? Like, that's the thing that's like, is really bad. Like, how they ask you so many questions. And me, yeah. Even though I'm a citizen, I will never forget. This is the thing that I hated the most, talking about my real life. They asked me, why the hell did you not start here in the U.S.? I was like, what the fuck is wrong with it? I started in Mexico. I have a degree. Like, you know, I was so annoyed, Raul. Then one time I came back from New York because I took a bus to go to Dallas to take the cheaper flight. Then I came back, I took the fucking GD and I passed it in like 2 hours. That's how angry I was. And then they never asked me anything again in any airplane or in the bridge. They only wanted me to have a degree here.
Yeah. And in the movie, like it does, like the guy does it, like, you know, from the beginning, this agent doesn't want to deal with Gael's character, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that Gael is drunk. It's not that Gael is what's it called? It's not that, you know, snarky.
It's not, you know.
It's the fact that this agent didn't want to cooperate at all. You know, the agent's being holier than thou. And one of the parts that irritates me the most, bro, is when he's like, okay, so you're gonna follow me. We're gonna go to second line for inspection. And once he's like, don't yell at me. Don't talk to me like that. And he's like, shut up. You will do as you're told. You need to listen. And it's like, it's that American ignorance of like, I'm the legal one. Shut up. You need to listen to me. And it's like, motherfucker, you're sitting in my fucking stolen land, bro. The land that you motherfuckers stole, bro. Yes, sir. You're standing on the damn land where you stole. You know, you're standing in my land. That's what you know, you're the legal one. You're the illegal one. And it even then now I've got like kind of goosebumps kind of going up my arm because it's something that like the minute he gets there, bro, the minute he drives in, I'm shaking. My hands are shaking. My heart sinks into my stomach. I'm just like, I'm anxious because I know how that feels every time, you know, it's like, what day is it going to be when they're like, oh, I don't give a shit that you're, you know, and people always be like, Raul, your fears are irrational. It's not irrational. They did it in the 20s. They did it. So many times where they said like, oh, I don't give a shit that you're a citizen. Get the fuck out of this country. You know? And it's just, it always, always gets to me. I've seen this movie 6 times now.
Damn.
Every single time, bro.
You have a really good point because Alejandro pays a lot of attention on how you feel like crap every time that you pass going to the States on a plane or even in car. Because it's also like a bringing back to that old episode. Billy remembers how the tension about the kid in the van passing to the border and seeing American Ferrara being a dumb American that he was racing, the dumb Mexican racing in the States without knowing any little Spanish. And she thinks that was like, oh, because I'm American, I'm good. And they was like, we don't give a fuck. You're fucking brown.
Yeah, it don't matter. You're still second rate. You can be from this side, you can be from the other side. You're just another one to us. You know, it doesn't matter what side you're born, bro.
Shit. I mean, yeah, that's the other thing about Alejandro is that he really pays attention to emotion. Like, he does it really well. And again, that's why beating a dead horse, it's mostly about themes and motifs. With his movies, as far as I could tell, Birdman and especially The Revenant is very much just more so the human emotions and just these long drawn out scenes of a lot of one takes as well, where it's just, or these amazing shots of just the land in general. Like, again, I was telling Raul this in Morocco and Japan. Oh my God. Japan at night looks my so favorite, beautiful.
One of my favorite scenes, man, is when Chieko is like on the swing and the camera's just going like.
I was just like, some euphoria shit.
Oh, I'm like, fuck, this looks beautiful. Or like even then, like, you know, we're talking about the immigration scenes. Like, you know, it's so scary, but like, fuck.
That's what makes it so effective though, is like, because it feels so real.
And even like, Billy told about the subversion of seeing two white kids running through the desert and being dehydrated. It was like,
It's just like, I hate how smart like asses these fucking agents can be, because like the minute they wake up, hey, is this your auntie? You're really gonna think that's their, like, ask, is this the lady that takes care of y'all? Mm-hmm. And like, yes, they do want the letters of permission. Like, what's it called? Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett should have given that woman that, you know, like that's irresponsible as hell.
That was ignorant on their part.
Yeah.
Not to like
give them that.
Yeah.
Give them that. But really the whole thing was, we didn't even talk about the tour bus guide that sticks with Brad Pitt and Kate Blanchett. Yeah. Cause he's the only one on the tour bus that actually seems legitimately concerned. Everybody else is concerned to a point, but they're just except that one English asshole.
No, yeah. There was one guy in there who was like fake concerned. You hear him? I'll stay with you to make sure your wife's okay. Okay, motherfucker. So why aren't you in that room with them?
Yeah, and then he's just like, 30 minutes, I'm leaving. And Brad Pitt, even when he's just like, oh, there's no ambulance that's going to come, they got to airlift her out. And then he starts beating him up because he's just pissed. And he's telling everybody, fuck you, fuck you. We've all been through that.
Yeah.
Feeling so angry. Brad Pitt really does portray anger very well.
Yeah. You know, also a scene that the movie needed, because the Border Patrol agent talks to Adriana Barraza. Oh, yes, we talked to him. He doesn't want to press any charges. I want to see the call of Brad Pitt. His wife is about to die, maybe because of gangrene. And then they get a call. Oh, yeah, your kids went to Mexico to a wedding, and they went to the desert. They're dehydrated. Maybe they're going to be alive. And sorry, sir, that you got in a political problem in Morocco. He will be like, what the fuck did I just miss?
It's the cherry atop the shit sandwich, because everybody goes through so much shit.
We needed a single Brad Pitt reacting to that.
I want to bring up something that Alejandro did here that was like, claps to you, bro. Uh-huh. I love that white woman in the van. Like, my husband is dying. Look, there's no air condition. You think the people in Morocco are living with central air condition?
I mean, that's,
look at the, it ain't a problem to
that's
them.
What's so great is that culture clash and just how spoiled.
And also, yeah. I thought that Kate Blanchett is panic about the ice and the water. Who the fuck drinks a fucking warm Coke?
That's disgusting.
Yeah,
bro.
Warm Coke is gross.
Oh, but she had no problem. She had no problem. What's it called? Denying whatever that was in
the
pipe,
weed?
Bro. That she
yeah,
that was she weed was or opium or something, bro.
Because they take her to the local doctor. Yeah. Luckily, they had a local doctor.
Yeah.
And, when she gets stitches.
Oh!
It looked so painful.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt that. I was like, oh, man. And then the woman that's just pressing down on the bleeding, because there's a lot of blood as well. Like, Brad Pitt, even in Kate Blanchett, and there's blood in her hair and everything, and it's like, oh, man. And...
No, I don't know why when you said that when she was smoking that weed, I imagine the booth lady from the Simpsons movie, and Kate Blanchett has a delivery scene of like a really weird dream about judgment and political stuff.
Some Alice in Wonderland shit.
Yeah.
I just love how like she was like you said, bro, but then again, like stuff like that is what makes you like forget that you're, what's it called? You know, your prejudice, your racist, bro. Like, you know, you're dying, bro. Like,
it shows at the end of the day that everybody's human.
Yeah.
And that we all have universal wants and needs and all that stuff. And I like the whole, it speaks a little bit about class, because of, you know, especially Americans are so spoiled. I'm embarrassed. And I am fully American. I've grown up with it my whole life. And I cannot imagine what it's like for the rest of the world.
No, it's also, you know, the thing that you said about prejudice and when Americans, they only acknowledge their faults.
They over-exaggerate things so much. It disgusts me.
They acknowledge everything when they're in a really bad struggle. Because it's always about,
it's about them.
And also it's about them. It reminds me of the last Purge movie in the Forever Purge. Lucas Hedges, he hates Mexicans, but a Mexican defends her pregnant wife. And at the end, they have he has to run to Mexico. And now a Mexican that saved his wife. Now his wife gave birth in Mexico to an American Mexican baby. And he's like, thank you for saving me. He learned his lesson until the end. And I'm like, yeah. Now you have a Mexican citizen daughter, you fucking asshole.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the one thing that we didn't really cover, aside from the detective learning how the mother actually, or how the mother died, but then learning how she actually died from the father, because Rinko Kikuchi says that she walked off the balcony and showed her the balcony, showed him the balcony too, and but the dad's just like, no, she shot herself in the head, and she was the first one to see it, and that obviously effed her up. And you feel like she was just trying to deny what she saw by making it seem like it wasn't as bad as it was. I mean, it was still bad, nonetheless, but she was trying to rationalize it. And then also the Morocco's arc. Let's finish that up, because that one also ends in a very, very sad note. Because the police find the dad and the kids. They shoot the older one first in the leg, and then they shoot him in the back.
The other one's just
like the innocent one. And then the younger one is just like, no, 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 just stop. Please, I'm responsible for everything. Just my brother needs help. Get up there and everything. Oh, yeah. And he destroys the rifle as well, which is what he should have done in the first place. But also the police are just kind of like shocked. I mean, you beat the shit out of this one guy, but if it comes to kids, that's where you toe the line. Like, they're shocked that they were firing at two kids.
Which just, dude, that like, also, like, one another thing that we share as humans. Oh, we sure do share corrupt-ass authority figures, you know? Because, like, from the first moment that police showed up, what were they doing? They were roughing up everybody, bro. You know, they were hurting them.
It was that guilty until innocent.
And mentality. Of course, the expert marksman child, you know, who was just like freaking going ham with like a 3-kill streak, or I don't know what the hell he was on, but like
he wounds one of the guys because he shoots back.
But like that gets me, bro, because like, you know, even though there's that rivalry, right, you know, those kids, you know, they love each other a lot, man. And you see it in that little montage, like after, like how they're like, you know, screaming into the wind, and you know, they love each other, bro. It's just they can't help but to, you know, be siblings and just, you know, fight with each other. And, you know, him just like going down that the cliff and being like, just don't shoot him anymore. Please don't kill him. And it's just, it's once again, it's Cain and Abel, like indirectly, you know, he killed his brother.
Am I my brother's keeper?
Yeah. And that scene gets to me like bad, bro. I'm like,
I mean, even the way they're carrying him down is very Christ-like with the arms up. Arms wide open.
Zack Snyder saw that movie and I was like, I have an idea.
Oh god, I knew.
Yes.
God, I knew you were gonna say that. Like, Sam Raimi did it first.
Oh yeah, true.
Spider-Man 2. We somehow connected Babel and Spider-Man 2 because of the fucking Jesus symbolism. But I think the kid's okay. I'm not sure. It doesn't look likely though, because he looked pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I was just like, I was kind of shocked too. I was, because you never see that happen to kids. You see it to adults all the time, like in war movies and stuff. But that's what makes it so effective, is that it was a kid, and like you said, an innocent kid.
Yeah.
The gentler kid. And before we wrap up, I just want to say, do you guys have any problems with this movie? I know that Raul, you have problems with Iñárritu and other Raul. do you guys got, I want to hear your criticisms, and then we can rate it, do the plugs and all that shit.
Yeah, you're first, Raul, because you're the one that is pro Iñárritu, so I would like to know your point of view.
You would think that I'm like biased to the point where I say no faults, but of course I'm not that way, man. You know, what's it called? I love this man, but you know, I have this at a 5 out of 5. I love it, you know, but I for sure can tell you the editing is jarring as hell, bro. The editing is so jarring. And it's like, boom, 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 boom. And it's like, yo, chill. Chill. Like, there's moments where I'm like, can we just stay here? Can we just stay in this angle? You don't have to cut to the reversal. It's very, like, it's still being executed really well if you just stay on this angle. And the editor just decided, like, no, they're going to go again and cut to three different angles of Brad Pitt and being helped bring, what's it called, Cate Blanchett into the helicopter. Mm-hmm. It's like, to me, it just, it's very, the editing is so jarring, bro. So jarring. But, you know, it's something that, like, to me, at least with this movie, I love it so much. It means a lot to me. And, you know, I'm able to look past it, but it's something that's like, yeah, this is what takes it away to me from being perfect, because it's like the editing is so jarring, bro.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, for me, I like this movie. I like this movie. I was like, I'm going to give it a 10. My criticism about the movie, I think it needed to be shorter. I think if you have cut at least like 40 minutes of the movie and add like 5 more minutes of Brad Pitt, I would like to see a scene of Brad Pitt reacting to what happened to his kids. I also, even though Billy has a point, but also you can make your own assumption that the kids are all right after what happened in the desert. Because if Iñárritu had decided to kill one of the kids, we would have known that one of the kids died. Yeah. But the kids are all right. And also, I think it would have been cool also to just to know what happened to Gael. It would have been cool to know what happened to him. But you can also make your own theory that maybe he ran away back to Mexico or something.
Yeah. He ended up driving back, probably.
Mm-hmm. And I like this movie a lot. It's like I said, I saw it once back in 2006, and I still remember a lot of it. And now coming back 15 years later, I remember now I knew even more details that I never noticed before. I will give this movie an 8. It's a good movie. Mm-hmm. What about you, Billy? Because it's your first time seeing it.
Yeah, so for me, I was not expecting just how realistic it was. Because, yes, I had seen Iñárritu before, but never to where it was like, you could argue that Birdman is just more a traditional movie, except for, like, going for the one take style, like a 1917 or like a Rope, even though there is no way you can actually do a movie in one take. There is no film, or at least shoot it on film. And that is something that I really liked about this movie, is that it is shot on film. And I had a problem with the editing as well. They needed to let the movie breathe a little bit. It didn't breathe when it needed to, and it went too quickly when it shouldn't have, is really the main criticisms I have for it. But overall, I thought the story was engaging. It was done in a very hyperlinked movies are tricky to do because they can become too convoluted. And I thought it was executed really well, authentic for every culture, like down to a T. And it felt way too real at points. But that's also just a testament of Alejandro's work as a filmmaker. And that was what he was going for. And I'm going to give this movie, I'm going to give it a 9.5. I also agree that it should have been a little bit shorter. But I was overall really, really impressed. And I really do need to dig into more Alejandro movies, just in general. And I got to watch Amoros Perros and 21 Grams, especially 21 Grams.
And also, like I said last year when we finished the Mexican month, Televisa, if you're hearing, please release the movies from the golden era with English subtitles, because Billy and a lot of Americans, they need to see those movies.
I need to see some Jorge Negrete. And,
oh, Pedro, my God. Yeah.
Especially Pedro Infante, because Pedro Infante
and Maria Felix, Mexico, too.
Yeah. I want my Infante Criterion box set, bro. Come on. Yeah. No.
Mm-hmm. The closest I guess I'm going to get is that Isaac Gonzalez biopic of Maria Felix. But no, I agree. And that was Babel. It was a very unique episode in the fact that we didn't really recap the movie, just had a great conversation. But
by the way, I forgot to ask this to you, man. What did you think? What did you guys think that note said?
It's never revealed. That,
what do you think that note said?
Oh, the note that the cop was reading. That's a good mystery, though.
It's a lot like Lost in Translation. Yeah. I'm sure it was the right thing.
I think it's a really subtle suicide note, because I think if it was an actual suicide note, the cop would have kicking his ass back up and been like, yo, I did not just leave this girl who was about to freaking kill herself. But I think it was like a really subtle suicide note, but of course we're never going to find out, you know. Yeah. We're never going to know, you know. But
some things are best left unanswered.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, thank you for coming on, Alejandro. I've wanted you on for a while. You listen to the podcast as well, yes, which I greatly appreciate. And you do a million things. And you have seen more movies than anybody I have met. And I've met a lot of people over the years. Like, you will pull up shit that nobody's heard of. And, like, you go for... You really are a Criterion whore, because you will go for like the like underrated just film that nobody's heard of. But it's like you and Quentin Tarantino have seen like everything.
Oh, don't compare me to him,
man. No, I know, I'm inflating that ego.
No, but, please do not, bro. I don't like people.
Where can the people find you? Because I know you got a. You got a ton.
Oh, man. As always, if you want to just keep up to date with me on what I do, like on the internet, like you want to talk to me, you want to look at my photography, or you want to follow me on Letterboxd, I'm going to be the Nerdy Chicano on all of that. Nerdy Chicano on Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, and twitch.tv/TheNerdyChicano. I'm not streaming as much anymore because I am employed, sadly, so it's taken my time away from all that. But if I do come back and I have time, you know where you can find me. I'm a Nerdy Chicano on twitch.tv/NerdyChicano. Raul Alejandro Mendoza on youtube.com, because you want to go ahead and get me to 100 subscribers so I can get my custom URL. Please. It would help a lot. You get it at 100, and I think I'm at like 54 or 55. I think I'm 54 subs right now. Also, I do a lot of stuff at my podcast network called The Nerd Core, C-O-R-P-S. So go and follow that at twitter.com/TheNerdCore_, Instagram at TheNerdCore. Twitch.tv/TheNerdCore, YouTube.com/TheNerdCore. We are doing our Salo, or the 120 Days of Sodom commentary today as we are celebrating 5 years of my podcast network being a thing. And I do a lot of things, man. I do a lot of things. But most importantly, I want you to go to Before I Leave Film on Instagram. Before I Leave is the film that I made. It's an LGBTQ plus Latinx film, whatever you want to call it. It's a story about a gay Latina who has to confront her culture and her sexuality and what it means to live in both parts of that world. And hopefully next month I will be able to send out a screener to these fine gentlemen here and be able to bring that movie to you all so we can discuss it, because I want to come back. And I know that Raul and I will probably have a lot of really good insight on just how our culture views homosexuality. And
when you get the pitch up, I'm already, I want to see this.
Yeah.
It sounds super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you made our friend, you showed Sabrina the script.
Oh yeah.
And she cried.
She cried. Yeah.
Yeah.
David B. Read the script while he was composing and cried.
Yeah. David B. Music is the guy that makes the music for all the like
Schmodown
circles
stuff
that we are into. And
yeah.
Yeah, he's.
And I got him, bro. I got him to do my score, bro.
We still need him to do a theme, but that's okay. And no, thank you for coming on. It really means the world. And you, buddy, where can the fine people find you?
Oh, now I'm really hyped because, oh my God, this sounds so interesting. Just because of the initial pitch, I want to see this. But you can find me as always at Raul Vader RDC on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and on TikTok at Raul Vader RDC. You can follow the podcast and SYNS Pod on Twitter. And you can follow us on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, the other ones. And please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Don't be like that asshole. And you really?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at MasterPuns196. Every word starts with a capital letter. You can follow me on Instagram at Billy Batson's Lightning. Nothing is capitalized. And once again, you can follow our Twitter at SYNS Pod. You can give us a 5-star review and just write a review on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever podcasts are listened to. And again, we appreciate not just Raul listening in, just anybody who listens in. It really does mean the world to us. We just did this just to shoot the shit and because we really wanted to. And it's just nice to know that people actually care. Yeah. And as always,
y como siempre, nos vemos el siguiente verano. Tan, tan, ta, tan, ta, 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 ta.